Tartuk. While I'm Rajvila, you know, I guess, generous, while I'm a Vila, now I do less than Mahnu, or Oscar's Haven Filiers. So, to explain that in English, I'd like to try something a little bit different tonight. I'd like to try and open a medical space around a poem. So, if I knew that Mahnu can you see why I know, I just think, oh, it's Minas Kuhn, if I'd love a vegan reader. I'm gone shows on the comments on the other side. So I was teaching meditation earlier this evening and I decided to try something a bit differently. I thought I'd bring along this gong and use it to open medicine space around the point. So when I was here done while I'm a late fresh Asperger. So late Asperger continued during my place we knew Garrider Asperger. So the poem was in Irish, so I'll read it in Irish first and then I'll explain it in English straight. We drew up some kiol, blew the cut a rimmel and down, a clay la handle, and karamu ama a the own. Misha a brisha eran tra, yis pada dienta a gong. Tanum la na makro me vajro bur. Get on the nose. Then the grisha goni. August the nose, the macron. Ach fea keren green, the corda morin plurum. Near tada the den of a gum. August now there bit. Cadi aiming. A piolish him. Brilliant, they're all. So while we knew before their shin, so they sing. And it's gone shin, my physical must be great, they got from it. So hit the sweet race and cure. I was enchanted by music. The answer cut the rimmel on down. Years spent on the margins of the world. They play the angle. Playing with angels. And Karamu Amma of the Aum. Was it a waste of time? Nisha Grisha Erin Tra. I am breaking on the beach. Near Tada Deantagum. I have nothing done. Tanum alan a macro mivadro vordum, ilan and knowit. The island in front of me is far too big for me, the island of enemies. Veng ig brisha egoni, agus knowit a macro. I'll always be breaking with enemies before me. Ach fea keren green, is mikarda mor hiempel. But look at the sun and my friends gathered round me. You have tied all the day in of a gum. I guess now they're a bit. I've nothing to do, and no enemies. Caddy yeming a cure the shenum, it's filiate the raw. What will I do now, but play music and speak poetry? I'm sorry, Karen, I'll stare at it. So, I guess, when the 10 of us down in the late two between shows, I enjoyed that poem was early about the learning the fiddle, and this one is dedicated to Martin Hayes. So I call this The Man with the Wooden Heart, from Martin Hayes. June, stuns us with his bow, weaves his soul out of the woodwork, as though his harp and fiddle were one. Never seen a harp so naked, the raw strings pulse with the resonance of the harp. The music, like maps, answers the riddles of the universe, existing and then ceasing to exist, appearing here and there, like light, like rain clouds or wild birds, tamed momentarily by the beating of his wooden heart.
We knew that the phone was a sacred center in our house, settled on the crescent table down the hall from the heat of the kitchen in the long, narrow passage. A mahogany door at the far end that straddles the world between my father's funeral business and our home. The hall was dark, a small opal wall light with a pulley chain hung directly over the phone, and a large hardback notebook lay open to its right. Always a collection of pens, bundled upright into the mug from Athens with the missing handle and the turquoise blade. We always had our lunch between 1 and 2, but when the phone would ring, my father would rise up out of his chair, tighten his loosened tie, and stride down the hall to answer it. Lunch. Head in my fridge of crisp and colour, making lunch for moi alone. Water drenched magnolia lettuce, chop and rock into the bone. Slice and slice of flashy pepper, tipping tuna from the tin. Think it needs something different. Catch a cloud and mash it in.
Obad, and you know, that's the morning version of a nocturne, which is the song of the morning, and Philip Larkin has a very fine obad, huh? I awaken and then I wait on my dreams to evaporate. After a vapid wank, I arise and wipe the cum from my stomach, the gown from around my eyes. I'm pretty okay the first cigarette, the first couple cups of coffee of the day, but from there, it's a bitch. All I can do is fall to my knees and still in my t-shirt sleeves pray for that mercy in which I hardly believe. This here is takes place in New York City, and there's a there's an island in New York, Fire Island, which is actually where the great poet Frank O'Hara was killed by a dune buggy as he was drunk one morning. But the thing about Fire Island is cars are banned on it. I don't know about dune buggies, but cars anyway. So everyone has a little red wagon to go grocery shopping with. So this here is Play-Doh unedited. It would be a vainglorious act of violence to even try and impose order onto those 3 weeks with her. But suffice to say, loose giver muffle truce. She packs us a picnic of, I mean, goose liver truffle mousse. That and a vented thermos of Olympic Committee Gatorade. And asks the ferry crew which side is port, cause we wanna be posh on our Fire Island excursion out to see the ocean and no shit, all the adults with their little red wagons. Suffice to say, in 3 weeks, 3 weeks and change, our love went from platonic to Play-Doh unedited. She suggests we get pre-verbal tonight, baby, and next I don't know my asshole from my spinning first chakra. But it's us for once mocking the fucking kitchen clock. Suffice to say she sucks cock and swallows as well as she sucks demon legions from inside of me. And wears her domestic abuse bruises around Brooklyn like so many proud chevrons. Because what we two can do, people, with an old bamboo makes everybody care. Thank you.
First one is called Full Circle. Reality is what we take to be true, like this damn M50 traffic jam. Truth is what we believe in. He believes he needs to take a leak. Belief is based on what we perceive. He perceives the fullness in the abdomen. Perception relates to what we focus on. He focuses on a bladder that feels like bursting. Focus depends on what we think about. He thinks about all those coffees he drank. Thought depends on what we perceive. He perceives a tiny trickle in his trousers. Perception is based on what we believe. He believes faces look down from that bus. Belief determines what we take to be true. Either piss himself or be a flasher. Our truth for each of us is our reality. It's rush hour at the toll gates on the M50. Next one is... The Fall and Rise of Morpheus. Being a scurrilous but totally fictional account of the adventures of a young buck about town, who suffers a lot of vigor and other misfortunes. This has nothing to do with any Cork poet's named Murphy. Prams along Panna, Alka Pops and E, Murphy and the Droop, frustrated by the lead. Can't get it up, just take a little pill. Not to worry like, it's Viagra bill. An end to deflation, tis the culture by, he gives the girls a whirl, Rogers like our Rye. People the Republic, Murphy is on a spree. For each babby in New York, in Cork there'll be three. Soon the Pfizer riser won't be made in Cork. Cheaper in Hong Kong, orders from Southport. A little health warning, safe sex is the thing. Should have worn protection, what a ding-a-ling. Mary Harn will fix him in her private clinic. Eat your greens, Brian, never mind the cynic. Mercius was here, crammed along the lead, father of the nation, to an industry. Thanks.
Thank you, Gerald Sweeney, please. And after Gerald Sweeney, we will have Green Bucket.
Thanks, Christy. I'm just going to read another little letter from Navy Gonal here. He's a teacher who writes these letters to the principal, and I think it's kind of self-evident what's going on. It's a rough enough school, and she's trying to deal with the kind of problem she has, and the principal never responds. Dear Principal, have arrived in 2W. All is as usual here. One pupil is careering around the class in a motorized scooter that he got for Christmas. I asked him to desist, but he failed to comply, so I carelessly knocked a few books from my desk in his path. There's no further difficulty from that quarter now. His injuries are not life-threatening. I'm sure that if he went to hospital, he would be described as comfortable in no time at all. Now, no one has, of course, been paying a blind bit of notice to my rendition of Kubla Khan. The only spark of interest they showed was when I told them that the poet Coleridge took opium frequently and was probably under its influence when he wrote the poem. They were all impressed at that, and one people asked if they had ease in those olden times. Another then wondered if they had rails. Trying to involve them in the lesson, I said that yes, in a manner of speaking, they did. I was thinking of absinthe and other favourites, and then I got on to the Hellfire Club, shindigs, devil worship, and so on, and that held them for a while. I decided to call it a day, though, and Jeremy Jones asked, would Coleridge be on the net, as he would be interested in doing business with him? I can imagine the kind of transactions Jeremy might have in mind, as he himself has been found distributing joints to other pupils on more than one occasion behind the toilets. Not wishing things to get out of hand, I got them to write out the whole poem, which gives me an opportunity to continue my correspondence with your good self, Principal. I only wish the poem was a little longer. Pity Coleridge was interrupted in the middle of writing it. By and large, the parent-teacher meeting went all right. There were only minor injuries and no fatalities at all, which is something to be grateful for, I suppose. These parent-teacher meetings are so valuable, I feel. One learns so much which can be of value in the classroom. I learned, for instance, that James Higgins had tuberculosis. It's great to know this, because I can now make sure to give him a wide berth at all times and approach only with a mask. My grandfather has a gas mask, which he got from his brother who lived in London during the war. I can find that. I also met Jay Khalil's mother. She cannot speak English at all, having only recently arrived from Pakistan. This explains why Jay has not been responding in class. I thought he just didn't like me. It's just great when things like that are cleared up for you. It now opens the way for me to go to evening classes in Pakistani. It also means that I won't have to waste any time shouting to him anymore. We'll also save money on stressors for my sore throat. Other useful things I learned at the PT meeting include, Paul Hughes from 6M was arrested and imprisoned last week for cycling through the park. I thought this was a harsh thing to do for such a minor offence. At first, I thought that he had cooked up the whole thing in an effort to avoid doing homework. But then when I checked with his mother, she explained that he had an infant in his arms at the time. You see, she explained to me, I lost my last child, and Paul, a very loving son, couldn't bear to see me unhappy and decided to go out and get me a replacement. I immediately made him go back and return the baby. I had no interest in keeping such a tired child, she assured me. It was completely the wrong colour. We'll furnish more details to his parent-teacher meeting in my next letter. That will be when I am with 5 acre French. A bientôt, mon cher proviseur. P.S. The pupil on the super scooter I mentioned earlier in my letter has successfully been removed from the covered door in which his head had lodged. No need to worry, Principal. No noticeable damage to the door. Head like kryptonite, that boy. Thank you very much.
You're waiting a little bit more time for another lady to come along, and then she come along and watch. So the boss at home is Bree Buckley. And Bree will be followed by your young kid.
Frightened I am that we dangle on puppet strings, putting on shows for each other or ourselves. More fearful am I that strings could break. We become real moonwalkers. That when I fall to land on your bright white skin, I may be eclipsed or have shone full floodlights upon you. I may crash and plummet to be lost in dark craters, choke on your moon dust, fall into black ashes. Eyes pop, veins bulge, insides hurl themselves out from the steel of my mouth. I will drift off, detached, like an empty balloon. And so, please be patient if I cannot look at you. Memories of failed moon landings darken my vision like visors. Marshmallow moon suit makes me untouchable. Give me time. I have met clones of you. They have tested their own authenticity with probes on my body, samples my skin, drawn blood from my veins. Despite results inconclusive, they distilled my doubt into rich genetic material. They have dampened sensation like a memory transferred. But I am still here. Distance does not equal absence. I stay around you at sidelines, light a lamp in dark hours, draw your shadow in and out, constant like breath. Though as far as man and moon, it's not impossible to reach me. It may take time. 3 days, 3 hours, 49 minutes. 238,855 miles, if you care to be exact. Or it may take my eyelids fluttering open to the flash of your camera. Snapshots compressed till movement cracks its way out of the shell of the reel. Or it may take your kiss flooding deep body. At speed of light, we'll combust, we will flare. A flamed fallen star hurtling to earth. Burn up in each other's brightness. Make a dent. Start again. Someplace new. This is called Man on Pup. With his black hole eyes glazed over with blue sky, he removed some of the day's debris from his ear. Somewhere outside had tried to reach the inside. I scribbled down notes from a white coat distance. As if Annie could heal him, stitched the feathers of a broken angel's wing, clutched his rosary beads from which he had hung, a puppet dangling from another world, his head and limbs spread on their strings. Speak to himself in foreign tongues, a direct line to God. Stamped out cigarettes, left his God's world catch fire. Was he saying them? Saying like saccharin? Did he go about his business both feet on the ground, till he broke against some crystal altar, a bright halo set fire to his unearthly fire? With his black hole eyes glazed over with blue sky, he removed some of the day's debris from his ear. Somewhere outside had tried to reach the inside.
I sit with myself as a little boat blundering in uncharted seas, desperately trying to keep afloat while resting with a playful breeze. I can pick itself to restless gaze or hush itself till all is still, seldom refusing to let me sail, thus drifting I remain until I find the harbour of my dreams, a shelter against cruel tides and waves, just the port of call I've seen unto the sun as we go to play. SOS, save our second. Waiting, wanting the second to hurry past. Insignificant, worthless, timeless. Last of the three events, monotonous non-entities. For these mere time trivias condemn a man to take his final breath. His spirit is snatched for life within the jaws of death.
We're winner of our five world challenge earlier on today, of course. And next up we have Sue. Is it Sue Crosser or Sue Crosser?
It's
Brave.
It's a Brave situation. It's
Brave. Just a brief explanation here. Earls Hill is in Windhoek, Namibia, and it's overrun by a habit tree, which is a small tree with yellow flowers and a thorn which is coaxed. Hence its name, which means wait a while in Afrikaans. So wait a while, the bottom of the Wakabiza tree. It was a day like any other, the day we sailed Earth Hill in the noonday sun, gathering fistfuls of shade along the way. You picked a handful of dust, a dry twig with curving thorns, a fold of your shriveled leaves. You paid homage to the Wakabiti thicket that grazed in the scattered dewdrops of our treasure. To be fair to you, you made me no promises, neither did I to you, although I dry-pressed the memory of the bath for you you played the previous night, between a pair of twin stones that sit snug within my chest, this memory mail that grinds all the dust eventually. As we devour the lemony sizzled air and send our breath to snuggle the Wakabiti boughs, I stuffed my ears with the clouds, even as my toes sought a foothold in the parched soil. But never mind, beneath our Wakabiti tree, seeds of our hunger will continue to sprout. They will carpet our flinty traces each rain month, only to die again in the bitter cold of the May winter. Like the Wakabiti shade winds it across its empty space, we once corrugated our mortal limbs, and as it dips its curious feet in the remotest emptiness, uncomfortable truth will continue to squirm in the sun. It was you and I who left them there. Even now I see them rolling down the Earth Hill, past my sand-colored house in the left, past the famed Mediclinic, then down in the Venice Avenue. I see them rolling behind Clock Tower in the Fourth Street Mall, and then across town to perish unnoticed and disregarded on your doorstep on the other side of Winthrop. And it was here on this hill crest on a day like any other day that you once thwarted me, from breastbone to navel to pubis and then across from nipple to nipple. What were you seeking there? Were you checking to see when I rooted through my shoulder blade in the hard pressed sole beneath my back? Were you hoping I heeded the Wakambiki call? Or were you hoping to bury yourself like forest's plenty within senior's poverty to birth yourself Eric's proud? But this here is another day. A day like any other day, a thousand yellow suns bloom in our sun's vivid eyes, and perhaps this memory is just a dry scab you pick occasionally with a cold, callous finger, or perhaps, like I, from a distance of 1,000 miles, we still hear the Wakabiki sing, wait a while, wait a while, wait a while.
And you can follow my team members.
All the panel sisters age. This morning rare soprano's voice whose velvet whip is cracked, to make sure he's lacking sap. Fear like silver eyes in the mirror shows no miss. Well, sorry friends get pissed, leaving all your goodbyes. Did you ever notice how really red blood is? He cursed them all for this. In his veins they know it's rivers needing to be dredged. Yet he knew he himself was dead, and what once was full of spice was now just stale bread. Spilling to outside some disco where it's the sin to sing a song or say hello to someone. He tried to subscribe to this single member choir, magnetically fanatical, opposing cold, sandwiched in between two walls and behind the devil's fire. The fence of self-defense was built, and over his face he pulled a quilt. He wished them all to hell, but only heard his funeral bell. Comfort comes my way, she embraces me as I lay my head upon her knee. Backwards and forwards she sways, calming wild hair seeds with gentle hands. Comfort believes in me, my white horses with fair nostrils, caught to a standstill on her nostalgic sands. My consoler counsels, she's in the concave of diet, and I, the layman of life, must have made a vow threatened, for comfort is his gallant like. Thank you.
Hi, yeah, following on from Robert Frost mentions there earlier, I'll do Robert Frost's poem there. Some say the world will end in fire, some say in ice. From what I tasted of desire, I hold with those that favor fire. But if it had to perish twice, I think I know enough of hate to say that far destruction ice is also great and will suffice.
Excellent.
that's the dealing of the light. I think that means that you have to buy a plank to see what it does. Okay, can we have Jenny Murphy up here?
Dave was reading a poem about fire elves, and I have a very short piece. It's based on facts about a woman called Britt Sullivan. It's called Still Out There. Who knows why Britt Sullivan, a former whale from Nebraska, decided to swim the Atlantic in 1961. Somewhere off Fire Island, 20 miles from her starting point, she lost touch with her escort boat and was never seen again. True. I read it. It's in the New Yorker, that has to be true.
Is that verbatim?
That is. Well, it's from a longer piece about Charlie Harvey. Three Borgesian fragments for Tom McCarthy. It is written, the history of the universe, including that sorry paragraph on human existence, is a tattered user's manual written by a minor disaffected god for the amusement of demons. The man whose library card expired. I have been travelling for nights without cease, down dilated corridors stretching into infinity, lying from floor to ceiling with innumerable books, which catalogue the world from beginning to end without catching sight of a single librarian. Till God breathes. The mind of God is teeming with particulars, past and present, fused together in a terrifying present. He does not deign to think is to ignore, to extract, to generalize, anathema to him who dwells fully in the first dizzy particle and the last inert deed.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Jerry, indeed. That seems to be our penultimate act for tonight, unless somebody has a something they want to say. Rosie, I knew you'd have planned. A late arrival, gentlemen.
Sorry. I just finished it, and I'm very excited because it's been first astonished, and I don't know if it's any good, but I will try it out anyway. Something out of touch. In the woes of the world, I am wet. When in her dreams I fall to sightless sleeping, and rise heavy with man's overwhelming death, that ticks the heartless clocks of timekeeping, up with restoration their own tales, up the ass of ubiquitous ignorance, making rat rings round nonsensical sails, blinkered from death's diligence. Too many tears do not ease the silent cry of unanswered, of dreams unanswered left to drown, and howling that rats too must die, and that much beauty is yet to be known, sobbing you to sleep with the world's open eye, and rocking you awake to dream as they fly.
Thanks, Rudy. Okay, we're coming here now. I'm just going to round off with a couple of points of my own now from my book here, Don't Step in the Bombs, which could be also read Don't Step in the Shit, because it's like how the bombs are going on and stuff like that. I want to thank everyone before I round off, I can squeeze in a couple of points now, for their participation tonight and for their observance of other participation as well, which is equally important. Speaking earlier to our guest Paul P, we were remarking on the fact that both of us spent previous recessions living in squats in London. And by Christ, we might go back there yet before this year is through. This is a poem I wrote. Some of the names obviously won't mean anything to anybody here, but the spirit in which they were written probably will. This is a sort of a dedication to my time in squats back in the late 1980s, early 1990s, mid-1980s as well. Right. The squat, by the way, is when you find an empty building, you break into it, you do it open, kind of, and then you live in it. And then when that's run out, you get fucked up by the comes, you find another one. Right. Some people went in London wasted money paying rent, which they worked all hours in slavery to pay. But those whom I knew well applied alternative intent, and we found to our great joy another way. We'd see a place with shutters and an air of some neglect, ideally convenient to the shops, then steal around in darkness when no neighbors would suspect, and leave a man on lookout for the cops. Finnegan brought a crowbar and Murphy had a plier. Jerry Mayo would unlatch the window panes. Some of them and Gannon were adept at feuding wires, and Burke and Sharkey knew their water means. In a way from called eccentric, we'd wire up the electrics and make the place majestic before long. But it was very far from slumming once we'd sorted out the plumbing, and we'd allocate the rooms as we went on. We'd clean the place without a trace and make ourselves a living space, and anyone we found were sound could quick call a crash or hang around. We'd paint the walls and wash the halls and check the floorboards for pitfalls. We'd men through Galway and from Yarn and get up the cork and die all. We'd accidents that sometimes hurt, and now again someone gave birth. We'd girls coming through the door and drunk as scrumps were on the floor. We'd wake them whiskey, beer and whores, or keep their infiltrating boards, and anyone who snored. We positives and negatives, help yourselves and relatives, and we found it most imperative to greet a friend of three who had arrived with duty free, and furthermore would decree to dispense it liberally. We had our fight and kept our rights. We went to work on building sites. We stole the darkness from the night and got ourselves as high as kites, while sitting point and smoking joints, steadfast, smiling and whatnot, hanging on to what we got, a golden light, a like a rainbow pot, what we called a squat. I remember at the party from Murphy's going away, I think he went to America and all that kind of stuff. You know, three Jamaicans came calling to the door. You have no booze upon us, ma, we have ganja, they're okay. So we sent them on their way to get some more. A young girl in the kitchen had her arms around her black. She said, have you ever kissed a woman from Kentuck?
He's just playing with the door, but I don't think it might be a crack.
And it must have been for next day she is work. Then a copper on the beat heard a knife from down the street and came running to investigate the fuss. Some handed him a can, said, there you go, my man. Next day, of course, he quit the force for us. There were joyful days in London when one was in the squats, no biggest pills of bailiffs were allowed. We didn't have much money, but good times we had lots, and our exile would be lonely in that crowd. Yeah, freedom days in London, looking Thatcher in the eye with a jackboot. Fools and rules and regulations, but was she who got evicted, and as Maggie wept goodbye, the squatters headed home for celebrations. Years flew by, and some guys found new ways to live their life. Some hit the States or Germany, others settled for a wife. One or two, I let a herd, died young and tired with nothing, except a big smile on their face, put there by years of squatting.
Well, I used to live in London and between squatting and signing on and working, she didn't have any time to go to the pub, let alone get a job in the pub, which is what I did many times. And I used to love Spotted Nights like Tuesday nights. You know, we have poetry here at Cork, in London, they had fucking dance matches, you know. Quite popular in Ireland, though, as well, but these guys took it seriously. I remember a pub in Camden when they were walking in during the Falklands invasion, that's the war there. And the top players came in and they were highly insulted. They'd been offered Argentinian beef during the Breaking the Dark match, the evening, and they refused to eat it patriotically. They lost the dark match as well. This is called I Was Married to a Dark Player from Hell. I was married to a dark player from hell. She was aged 8, but she wasn't that well. She stared at the world with a prominent squint, and her complexion had more than a nicotine tint. Our union was spiked by the dark troll's life, every 45 seconds of it told to be quiet. And when things turned tense, she forbade any talk, but instead left me notes on a blackboard in chalk. Whatever she did, she did it in trees, with a fag in her mouth and a bend in her knees. Though most of the time, she preferred just to stand at the end of the room with a glass in her hand. We mixed with small groups and would say to my wife that her husband could do with more aim in his life. They'd arrive at our place in a hired minibus, and we'd visit them if they weren't with us. Her diet was simple, as she ate from a tray that was covered in tinfoil and contained an array of nuggets and drumsticks that had been deep-fried, and cheese or ham sandwiches with lettuce inside. Her work plans were thwarted at every throw. She aimed either too high or not too low. And at job interviews, she'd muster her charm, but everyone knew she was chanting her arm. We had prearranged sex that I didn't enjoy. Instead of my name, she would scream out, Bullseye! I told her, that's it, I'm drawing the line. She said, 5 feet and the water would be fine. Our marriage allowed for no compromise. Everything was black and white in her eyes. And even our rows were just games now I see, for whenever I won, she went best out of three. Friends saw my marriage as a game that was cruel and tried lining me up with a girl who played pool. I said, give me a break, have you seen the cue? She said, every guy snookers from here to Carnoo. Then one night it all ended in a flurry of words. She accused me of cheating. I said, don't be absurd. She went into the kitchen, took two two knives from the shelf and went into the garden and double tapped myself.
Thank you.